Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Anna Martha is one of my go-to people when I need a sanity check, which happens quite often. A psychotherapist, a fellow mum of three, and now author, she has a very special way of giving guidance that walks the line between professional insight and personal experience, and it makes for a powerful combination. There are snippets of advice from this live episode on overwhelm that I have revisited time and time again. I hope you find it as useful as I did. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. I know what a massive achievement that is, especially if you've got kids. Once upon a time, we just used to pop out on a night out, and now it's like a huge operation. So I really, really appreciate that. A couple of other thank yous. Thank you to our sponsor, Destinology, who I have been a customer of before. I went on an amazing holiday with them a couple of years ago. And the reason they're great is that holidays are obviously a complete game changer when it comes to overwhelm. But the problem is when you're really overwhelmed, is it's actually really hard to get your shit together to book a holiday. And they are kind of old school in that you get a travel assistant throughout the whole process. They even managed to find us a whole range of different hotels where you could sleep five people in one bedroom, which if anyone has got three kids, that is no easy feat. So yeah, thank you to them and thank you to the Hoxton for having us. And of course, thank you to you, Anna Martha.
Thanks for having me.
Am I right in saying this is one of the first times you've kind of been out in the evening?
In over a year. So Florence hasn't had her bedtime feed. So I haven't, it's actually, I was going in the opposite direction to everyone.
How did that
going
feel?
Home. I felt like...
alive?
Like I was escaping. No, it's exciting.
But thank you, because that's a massive compliment.
No, it's an honour to be here.
So the name of the game of this podcast is Honestly, and we start with a quick fire round to get us both in the mood. Are you ready?
I think so.
Nothing too scary, I don't think. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how fun are you?
7.
Quite solid?
Yeah, I think it depends. 7?
7's good.
Yeah, is that all right? I wouldn't go 10.
I wouldn't judge you.
But I wouldn't go 1. Just a little bit.
Okay, above. 7 it is. On a scale of 1 to 10, how popular are you?
I don't know. This is very hard to answer. Amongst my children when I've got chocolate, 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how rebellious are you?
4. Again, completely depends how you catch me.
You can be wild.
I can just go a little bit wild, but I never really break the rules. Like, my wild is kind of coming out of the house after 7 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call that a huge act of rebellion, but, you know.
Yep.
Favourite colour?
Purple.
Ooh, you're quick. Has that been a long-standing favourite?
Yeah, but I don't actually know if it's true anymore. I'm just used to saying that.
What, since you're about 6?
Yeah. Cadbury's purple.
Stick with it.
I'm staying with it.
Most prized possession?
Oh gosh, this is really hard.
You've got to go with your life.
I mean, my gut instinct is not what I want to say.
Say it. Phone. Your phone. Yeah, but that's probably really, really true.
It is true.
The
it's
panic
got
when you
on
think
it.
You've
that's
lost
where all
it.
My photos are.
Okay, your phone. Well done for being honest.
I was being honest.
How would you describe your relationship with money?
Up and down. My childhood setting is we didn't really have much. But being older, our bank account's a bit healthier. So I find it, I live on two different levels. Mm-hmm. Like, internally, I'm quite frugal. So it feels it's a very different dynamic, not having to kind of be so careful in every way like I did growing up. It's that's not a one-word answer.
I didn't say one
okay,
word.
Okay, well, that's all right. me being a rebel. That's my rebellion. I've just shot to a 10.
Do you believe in reincarnation or life after death?
Life after death.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Categoric. I know the answer to this because we've just discussed it at length, but what star sign are you?
I'm a Virgo. But apparently you think I might have a little bit of something else going on.
I just
there.
Find
exotic.
It...
exotic.
Many Virgos that I know... I would not be as vulnerable as you are online.
No, I want to go and like read about that.
You need to find out what time you're born.
I'm intrigued.
Sorry for anyone who thinks this is bullshit, but you know, I'm into it. So humour me. What do you want to be remembered for?
Just encouraging people that things don't have to be the way that we're used to them being, that there's so much more. Yeah.
And three words your inner critic or imagined worst enemy would use to describe you.
My inner critic would say not good enough. That's what I'm always fighting against. Yeah.
But now to get on to the really interesting bit, and the reason I've got you here is to talk about overwhelm. Now, this event, amazingly, sold out twice. We had it in a smaller room, and then we come to the bigger room and it sold out as well. And either you all love Anna and I, which I hope that's the case, but more that many, many of us are trying to deal with overwhelm. So kind of a bit of a trick question, I'm sorry, but can you tell the audience a bit about yourself, who you are, what you do?
Who I am. So I'm Anna, mum of three. I sit in my house in Surrey with the kids trying to juggle life. And I'm so passionate about talking about anxiety and talking about intrusive thoughts. I want to say normalize, but I kind of don't want to normalize. I want people to realize that just because things are normal for other people doesn't mean it has to be their normal. So just because things are common
doesn't mean it has to be normal.
My brain just doesn't stop. You know how some people like thinking images and some people thinking pictures people thinking stories? I just think in words.
Me too.
I wish it would like calm down a little bit sometimes.
Quite intense.
But writing is, it's always been a therapy to me.
So the reason I said that was a bit of a trick question is again, learning from myself. But now when people say, oh, you know, tell me about yourself and what do you do? It's like, oh, wow, once upon a time you'd be like a one word, two word answer. And now you can't even begin to. In fact, I tried to do it. I'm going to read it out. I'm a mother, a wife, a friend, a sister, a podcaster, a blogger, an Instagrammer, a daughter, a client, an employee, a provider, advisor, planner, chef, cuddler, personal assistant, nurse, counsellor, role model, taxi, sounding board, and supposedly sometimes a lover.
Are you tired?
I'm tired listening to that. And that list is absolutely transferable. And there's many things that we didn't even think, you know. Just saying,
so
bloody well booked though. We've all got to be costume designers as well.
Oh no. I said to Oscar, you can have what's in the dressing up box and we'll find a book to go with it. That's it.
But you know, when we think, oh, it feels like a lot, it's because it is a lot, isn't it?
And it feels hard because it is.
Yeah.
It is.
And that's a fact. I've really noticed a thing that I keep doing every Sunday or Monday. I go, right, I've just got to get through this week and get through this checklist of stuff and it'll be all right. But the problem is,
that's life.
If you say that every single Sunday or Monday.
What are we living for? The next weekend or the end of the to-do list? Or when will we get the break?
When do you stop?
That's why you have to find ways to give yourself breaks along the way.
So tell me about your experience of overwhelm and how it shows up for you.
Oh, I live life at 100 miles an hour. I'd say it's a bit of a set default, but at the same time, I'm very much fueled. Like I'm a natural perfectionist. And that's something I really have to fight against. I live very fast. I do things very fast. I'm very efficient. But then I crash. I have these crashes. And I think the worst crash was 2 years ago. And it's not something I've really spoken about that much. And I didn't speak about it at the time because it just felt too raw. But 2 years ago, I think my Instagram had been going for a little bit. It started going down the mental health route. I started it for
interior
design, just to kind of screenshot lamps because I was making my friends very bored of my WhatsApp messages of tiles. So that's why I started it. And then it kind of segued into mental health and anxiety. And I think I was getting so many messages and I was seeing a couple of clients in my living room at home, just about covering childcare costs. All I felt was that I had nothing left. I was living from empty, like scraping the bottom of the barrel. Taryn would, you know, want to cuddle up to me on the sofa and I would just be like, wow, that is just too much. You want something from me and I can't give it. I haven't got you. Just another person that wants something from me. And I just had this massive kind of burnout. It was really ugly, really ugly. He was treading on eggshells because he was like, I just don't even know how to look in your direction without you flying off the handle. But that's how it was. There was no text message from a friend just even asking me how I was that wouldn't push me over the edge of that's just another person I have to reply to. Mm. And what really scared me actually was how I think this massive sense of failure, like I am not enough. And the further sense of failure that I'm a therapist and I've been doing this about 10 years, kind of working with people through stress, kind of really know myself quite well. This burnout just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I think, you know, it feels so sudden, these moments where we just feel completely flawed. Mm. But really, when I look back, it was quite incremental. Mm. But I just, it was like, have you ever heard of that analogy with a frog in a pan of boiling water? And if you turn the heat up slowly, it's not going to jump out. But if you suddenly slammed it on, it would be like, what the heck? You know, I'm out of here. And I think burnout is often like quite incremental. Mm. And it scared me. This energy would just come over me and it was so self-destructive. I think because I've been expecting so much of myself and expecting to fulfill all these different roles, all those different hats that you were talking about. And I couldn't do it. Mm. So the only person I had to blame was myself. And I thought there's got to be more for me than these, just, you know, this roller coaster of like, I'm living life at 100 miles an hour. Oh my gosh, don't even touch me because you're asking too much. I'm living like, you know, and it just felt like I was constantly firefighting myself. That's, you know, that's one of the experiences of burnout. But I get that on a micro level, yeah, exactly. Really.
That's
often
what I was listening to you and thinking. It's funny you should say that self-critical thing, because what I've learned from myself is that overwhelm tends to show up in three key ways. One, when I start saying the house is messy. Now, for context, our house is always messy, but because I've got three kids in it. But if it starts bothering me, I'm like, that means my mind is messy. The other one is that the moment I start being critical of my body is actually my default when I'm overwhelmed, which feels really disconnected, but I just know that is self-sabotage kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the third, which is really counterintuitive, is that the more stressed I am and more overwhelmed I am, the more I take on. So my key coping strategy is like, I'll do it. Yep, I'll do it. I'll do that. 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 And to try and steady the ship. But of course, you're not steadying the ship.
You know, you say that's counterintuitive, when often at the bottom of this, when we strip back all those layers, it comes down to this belief that we are worth what we do. So if that is being challenged in you, then it kind of in a weird way makes sense. You just do more. Yourself. I've got to prove myself.
It's like kind of good girl mentality, isn't it?
Absolutely. But those are your red flags. And it's really helpful to know that. I would always encourage people, know what your red flags are. Because with overwhelm, it is often that kind of incremental buildup. So learning to recognise what those red flags are
is huge,
so helpful. Yeah. So you're not firefighting it when you're sitting on the kitchen floor.
No. Yeah.
Sobbing on a Friday afternoon.
I've definitely been in that place. But we both talked about the Friday afternoon effect, which is just like, you can be having a great week and just suddenly you're like this. And I actually, thinking out loud, this partly because you get to Friday afternoon and you're still surprised that you haven't got that chilled weekend in front of you, that you're going to get up on Saturday and you're going to go, I'm going to parent again today.
Yeah.
I'm going to get exactly the same amount of sleep. There is no night out.
I think for me also, it's the fact that my husband's not around in the week. So I know that he's coming home on a Friday. Surviving. I never quite know what time. But it's like, you know, when you kind of flop before the finish line, you see it so close and you're like, I'm done. And you kind of like hobble your way there. That's what, but it is, you know, that's telling me something, is that there is stuff that I need to do during the week to protect myself from that kind of, actually by Friday, I've got nothing left in the tank. I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel and I'm struggling to be patient with the kids. I'm that inner critic's really, you know,
going
ramping
for you.
Up. And then my husband comes in and he actually bought me some flowers the other day on the Friday. Soon as the doorbell went, I started crying. Aww. And he was there like, I got these flowers and I just went upstairs and was like, I'm done. You know, and it's about thinking, well, that's like a mini roller coaster, you know, and it's like a micro version of the massive burnout. It's not a sustainable way to live.
It really isn't. I already know the answer to this question, but of course, motherhood is a massive contributor to this because there is no respite. And the most crucial thing about any kind of overwhelm is finding space for rest, isn't it?
Yep, it is. And I think we can find a lot more space than often we feel we can. They did this kind of study of like the women's responsibilities in the home. And they're saying, we have more pressure, but we're not necessarily doing a lot more stuff. But we think we are.
Oh, wow.
And that was such a like, oh, crikey. Well, I can't, like, I need to explore that a little bit more for myself. And then I felt really challenged. It was like, you know, when you kind of do something with your eyes half shut, and I looked at the usage on my phone and I was like,
that's
a lot. There's hours that goes there. And no wonder I'm feeling like I'm always having to do something, because I am always doing something. Mm. We don't stop. It's the motherhood. It's the otherhood. It's the mental load. It's the emotional load. It's But it's just a
as
lot.
We were talking about earlier between us, you know, once upon a time you'd stand in the queue at the post office, or you'd be on a flight, or you'd be on a train, or you'd be, there'd be these just moments, wouldn't there? Little pockets of rest and reflection, and they've all gone.
It's all gone. And I think that's what we need to start putting back. But to do that, we have to acknowledge that we're going to start feeling some of the feelings that we're often trying to avoid in those behaviours. You know, the stress, the frustration, the sadness, the grief, the loneliness. Yeah. I sat on the train and I kept saying to myself, I'm going to put my phone away and look out the window, because no one does that. Like, really, I was looking around. There's one girl reading a book and I saw a man. I was like, he's not on his phone. He's not got a book. And I saw he was asleep. And I kept challenging myself just to put my phone in my bag and just look out the window. Went for a really long tunnel. Got back out again. But, you know, when you daydream, when you think, when you stop, you're letting the feelings in. There are feelings there that want to be heard, you know. And I think often we use the phone to kind of fill in the gaps, but actually we're really efficient with it. So we're often doing stuff. You could be doing your shop. I'm going to get through the admin. But actually there's so much value in the stillness. We're just really uncomfortable with it, a lot of us. And, you know, if you imagine sitting in a room for an hour with nothing, you know, what, like, that feels a little bit, some of us that might feel like an absolute luxury, get me in there. But for the majority of us, it's like, oh, you know, we have to sit with ourselves. Do we actually want to be with ourselves? And like, what does that mean for us? And if we're going to find rest, which we can more than we like to think we can, when we look at the usage of our phone, and not saying, well, you've been on your phone for 4 hours, therefore you could have had that 4 hours, because we know that it's kind of drip-fed through the day, but it's just like the little pauses of like, could you have done something that would nourish you in that 3 minutes? Could you have read a page of a book? Could you have reflected on a memory? You know, could you have done something that would give something from you? Like, how often do we feel like we've really got something, or we've been fed by a quick scroll?
You can feel it in your own brain, can't you, how you're what you're doing on your phone. You know, that mindless scroll feels horrible. Ooh, whereas if you're reading a newspaper article on the phone, it's got a very different sensation, isn't it? But you have to check yourself.
I do
so often that I delete Instagram basically every day to make myself work, but you have to be really comfortable with the fact that I know that I go to do it, and then I've watched the moments that I go to do it, and it's when I'm trying to exit out of something. Oh, I don't want to think about that. Oh, I don't, you know, and you're like, oh, I'm going to flick onto it, and actually it doesn't take long for that to subside once it's off there.
That's it, it's a habit. Average phone users go on their phone 2,600 times a day, and that's an average phone user. I'm not an average phone user. Like, I'm definitely not an average phone user. I don't know if huge amount of us would class ourselves as an average phone user. But I was thinking the other day about, and I had this like picture, and it was like, can you imagine like a big glass jar, and you've got these big pebbles, right? And they signify different parts of your life. It might be family, it might be work, it might be friendships. And you plop them into the jar, and there's space around it. There's like air around it. And if you think about before phones, you know, that space would signify the stillness, the moments in between things, the pauses. And that's the daydreams. Like, that's when we daydream and we just like look out the window and we just
have a think.
Think about stuff. Maybe you get a nice idea. Maybe you'd think about a friend or family member or a nice memory, or, you know. And now it's imagine like getting a bag of sand and just pouring it in that jar, and like all of that space is full. You know, we fill all of that space that actually has such a purpose. And I don't know about how you guys sleep, but when I'm overwhelmed, I will wake up in the night and I will not be able to get back to sleep. Because, you know, all the space that we fill in the day that we would normally have spent kind of just processing, we don't have that anymore. So often we find that our sleep is interrupted because our emotions are like, and our thoughts and our concerns are like, hello, it's anything else.
Everything
like,
you've ever done now, wrong in your
now
life.
Now you're listening to me. Now you're listening to me. And can you remember that Dido song? I'm so lonely, I don't even want to be with myself anymore. You know, we're so surrounded. We're so full. We're so stimulated that actually when there's stillness and quiet,
it's really uncomfortable.
Flipping uncomfortable. Like, I can speak for myself, but I'm really trying to learn just to enjoy my own space that isn't filled with something. Guided meditation is a really easy way in.
In a minute, I'm going to tell you, you know, I asked the people of Instagram, but I asked them if they meditate, because actually this is a real trigger for me, because I'm regularly told that I should meditate, but now meditation is becoming, which I don't do, I feel a guilt around it. And it's like,
this is a self-care thing when you just think, well, I need to do some self-care. Yeah, that's just like, another thing on my list.
I bloody want to meditate. Well, I do, but don't make me feel guilty about it. And then you think, God, everyone else is meditating. They're not.
No.
I did laugh about that trend on Instagram in January. Everyone was getting up at 5 to do these things. They soon went quiet, didn't they, after a few weeks? Like, that didn't last, your journaling. Stay in bed. Stay in bed and have an hour.
Do you know what, though? Contradictory to that, I do get up earlier than the kids now, because I was finding that there was no space for me in the day.
Well, that's it. That's why I don't meditate. When do you meditate as a parent?
I just do it in bed before I get up. I just put a thing on, and I don't do it every day, and I have to really work hard at not feeling like, you know, when you kind of, you miss a page in your book at school and you're like, crap, I missed the page. Like, you kind of want to rip it out so it doesn't, you can't see it, that you've...
Hello, Virgo.
That was me, Virgo. There we go. But finding that space, had to put that back in there somewhere. And at the minute, that's all.
I don't have my phone upstairs. So I do lie in bed before I go to sleep and in the morning and sit with my thoughts. So that is a kind of meditation.
Yeah.
I don't look at my phone until I made a cup of tea. So that is actually sometimes 25 minutes
that's
after
amazing.
Working.
That's amazing. I could definitely learn something from you. I need to stop putting more boundaries.
I cannot tell you, leaving your phone downstairs is such a game changer.
It's a stressor just to have it in the room. Yeah. There's such thing as micro stress. So we might say, like, in my life, I haven't got a lot of stress. We might say that. But actually, what we do not realise is that even if we're in the room with our phone, when we're looking at it, we're seeing it flash, it triggers something in our brain. We're like, oh, what's that? It's taking you away from that moment. It's taking you away from where you are and engaging where you are. It's a micro stressor. If you add up all of those little kind of micro stress, I'm terrible at notifications.
Yeah.
I think.
You've got to have them all off, haven't you?
They've got it. I turn them off flashing up on my screen. But if there's an email, like if there's a number there, I'm not one of these people that could. I've got friends that's got like 7,500, and I'm literally itching kind of. How can you do that?
But going back to the World Book Day, it's going to be a theme here. Because I don't have my phone in the room, I did have to sit and have a think about what I could do. Whereas if I was in my room, I would be Googling it.
But think of the discussions that used to come out of not knowing stuff. We used to have to sit with the unknowing. We used to have to sit with the fact that we could sometimes, you know, speculate about something and not know.
Yeah.
Whereas we do not. And I think that translates to kind of on this emotional, like with the anxiety, it feeds anxiety. A lot of working with anxiety is coming to terms with the fact that we do not know what's going to happen tomorrow. And I think if on a level, like a cognitive level, we cannot sit with the fact that I do not know, what is it, Saturn, one of those planets isn't listed as a planet anymore.
Pluto,
thanks. I'd Google it, but my phone's over there. You know, something comes up and it's like, oh, I can just find that out. You know, we find sitting with the unknown very hard, and we know that we can.
Do you think
that's
why coronavirus is going insane? Because people, there's no easy, like, quick answer.
No,
and that triggers something in all of us.
There's only so much we can do. And it's the unknown. And actually, you know, life is the 50 shades of grey in between the black and the white. Anxiety loves the focus. And this is why I'm so passionate about getting to the bones of anxiety and really understanding it, because otherwise you're just going to be like the whack-a-mole. Like, now I've got anxiety about this, now it's about that, now it's about the coronavirus, now it's about
anything,
you know. So it's about really kind of getting underneath all of that.
I asked the good people of Instagram if they were currently feeling overwhelmed, and 84% were. I don't know if my overwhelming thought was, what about the rest of you?
That is a
huge amount.
That is a massive amount of people that are just sitting there feeling like they're living life
in a panic.
Yeah, from the bottom of the barrel.
And then I asked them, is overwhelm something you feel often or sometimes? And 86% said often.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And there's got to be another way, because it isn't
a sustainable way
of living.
It isn't.
It's not a sustainable way of living.
Like, a voice in my head does say, look, my audience are in a certain part of their lives. You know, they're similar to your audience. You know, they are, Cherry Healy always says, the rush hour of our lives.
Yeah. But we live like we're being chased, though, actually, a lot of us, don't we? So that's kind of
But it is a challenging, if
it
you
is,
do.
It's hard. But we have to start prioritising the things that are going to come up against this sense of overwhelm. When you peel away the layers, it comes down to not feeling enough. the way that I think about it, or if I used to be very much like, no, you're enough, you are enough. Actually, I think we're not. You know, we
I'm
are
pulling
not,
a face for people who face. Are listening, not seeing.
You know, we are not enough. Should. We are not enough to be fulfilling all the roles that we feel we need to be fulfilling to the standard that we feel like we should be fulfilling them to. We are not enough. We were never meant to be enough. We will never be enough. And when you are constantly trying to push yourself to do something which you were not fully created to do to the extent that you feel you should, and the extent that our culture is selling us that we should be, you're going to feel that sense of shame. You're going to feel that sense of guilt. And that's what's going to find you on the floor, feeling rubbish about yourself and critical towards yourself, because you're trying to reach for something that was never an achievable goal.
And there's also the other layer on top of that is that you assume that everyone is achieving it. But, you know, everyone's got dead plants in their house. Oh, everyone greets their partner with hostility on a Friday night. It's like... Yeah. But not acing it.
No, and you know what? I think because of my job, I get a real glimpse into the behind the scenes. Like, yeah. I get a lot of DMs.
And
I
what you're
see
seeing.
The mess. I see the pain. I see the panic. I see that sense of, like, I'm not enough. I've got this guilt. And then I see their pages. Yes. And you would never know that.
No.
That's fine. But I think we all have to... just keep coaching ourselves. We're hardwired to believe what we see, and we're hardwired to believe what we think.
Yeah,
that's and neither
the,
of
the
those.
Moment you realize that your thoughts can be lying to you,
yeah,
is like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what have I been believing? You know, what are my narratives that are so deep set that's going to take a good bit of very valuable and valid work undoing? But one of those is that everything is not what we see, and everything and our thoughts are, you know, not always true either.
No.
But you do then realize that being called a supermom is considered a compliment. It's not a badge of honor, it's a problem. We're looking and holding to esteem in each other. We're just, you know, we're all kind of accidentally perpetuating this cycle. I never forget walking down the high street with a double buggy and two under 20 months, you know, with my sunnies on in the summer, marching into town to a playgroup. I must have honestly looked like I was bossing it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I was in pieces. I'd just been hyperventilating on the floor to my husband saying, I can't do this. I'd thrown my son's digger so hard against the floor that I'd smashed it. But I did actually want to smash it. It didn't make me feel better. It just made me feel worse. But you know what? I was worried about telling everyone how much of a mess I was, because I thought then I might fall apart once and for all. So, you know, there is also, it's a bit of a coping mechanism, isn't it? Looking like you're together. And it's not because you want to tell the world that it's achievable and you can be super mum. It's because you're worried that if they see you and talk into that vulnerability, you might completely shatter, and you can't. For the sake of continuing motherhood and functionality.
It's funny you should say that. One piece of criticism on the website that shan't be mentioned, but that I have previously been on and been cut up by, they call me scruffy. And do you know what? I was just like listening to you now. I'm fucking proud that I come on camera looking scruffy. Yeah. I mean, I often look vaguely scruffy, but I can look like I've got my shit together. But when the times in my life when I am over-indexing on looking like I've got my shit together, things are falling apart.
Yeah.
When you're seeing me on camera looking really scruffy, that means I'm happy.
Yeah.
That means I'm not trying to prove anything to you.
Yeah. No.
So screw you. Website, no name. Anyhow, carrying on with this. How does overwhelm show up for you? And these are some of the answers. Panic attacks, insomnia, which you've already covered, nausea. It comes monthly. Well, we can all relate to that.
But
what do you mean I've got PMT? Oh, yeah.
You're right. I think that will push you into the overwhelm territory. We need a margin between our load, the stuff we have to do, and our limit to what we're able to do. Yeah? Load and our limits. So all the things you have to do and what you're actually capable of. Well, you need a margin. It's like a savings account, right? You have a savings account in case the washing machine breaks, then you don't have to go without food. So you just, you know, money for a rainy day. You need a bit of contingency. Mm-hmm. And we live in that gap. We push it. I live to my limit. So when I get PMT, or when the kids get sick, sick, or I've had a terrible night because Charlie's weed the bid twice.
You've got nowhere to go.
4:25 in start. It's fine. So then it's just the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, because you're already done.
Yeah.
You're living to that done point. You're living in the, you know, the red bit of the petrol playing the game.
In survival mode.
Yeah. So yeah, PMT will
send you over the edge.
It will.
Oh, but it gets more vicious the older you get. But maybe that's why it gets more vicious, because you're more overwhelmed the older you get.
Do you know what? I've done quite a lot of research into this, because after I had Florence, my hormones were all over the shop. It was just terrible. And what it was saying that is your body, and I don't quote me on this because I was just massively paraphrasing, your body will prioritize dealing with stress over equalizing your hormones, right? Because when we're in stress, it's telling our nervous system that we're at risk, that we're at threat. So it prioritizes that to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. So when we're living in that sense of stress, that feeling of being chased, our body is prioritizing trying to kind of moderate our system. So when that is compromised with like hormones or like tiredness, then it just, we don't deal with it as well. We can't deal with it as well, because it's not being prioritized. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's called the pregnenolone steel.
Oh
boy, I probably not pronounced that properly.
Other ways it showed up is anger, procrastination, and I'm not going to read this one out, but it came from my husband Ben, and it's so bad that my initial reaction was like, you've never been overwhelmed, and it's like, there you go, check yourself, men can feel overwhelmed as well. Other ways it shows up is feeling the crazy need to control your surroundings, which is definitely what I do. I forget and lose things, which for me, I lose my wallet every time shit is hitting the fan, and crying. Can't be a bit of crying, can you? I love a good cry though.
But again, it's just those emotions. It's, you know, it's when the floodgates open. It's when that vulnerability is kind of enabled and it just all comes, because we don't leave space for it in the day to day.
And also learning to communicate. It's taken me a long time to learn to communicate before I get to that on the floor stage.
But that's, you know, you really listed three of your red flags and that's why it's really important. So it's about checking in with yourself. And again, that's something we do so well with the people in our lives that we love. Like, if you think about your children, you're constantly thinking, what do you think? What do you feel? What do you need? Do you need a nap? Do you need dinner early? You know, we need to start checking in with ourselves. What do I feel? What do I need? You know, am I hungry? Am I tired? Do I need a wee? Have I been hopping around the kitchen for an hour, even though I'm like in jumping distance from the toilet? Like, if we're not even meeting our basic needs, what message is that giving to us? You know, what's that doing to our self-esteem? When we think, if my son was like, Mommy, I'm tired, and I'm like, I'm busy, I'll put you to bed in an hour. Oh, I'm tired. Okay, later. But also, what are we saying to them? What am I saying to my son if I'm completely ignoring even his basic needs? Mummy, I'm cold. Okay, well, you'll be fine. You know, I'll go and get him a jumper, or I, you know. It's like we would be telling them that they weren't worth their basic needs being met. Yeah, so what, when we're constantly overlooking our own even basic needs, and when I talk about self-care, I'm not just talking about the lovely acts, the lovely things, the massages, all of that stuff. I'm talking about, are you hungry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? Do you need a wee? You know,
do you need to be spoken kindly to?
Perhaps, do you need a hug? Like, do you need to call a friend for 5 minutes? Because if we're not even meeting those needs, again, what are we doing to our self-esteem? We're telling ourselves that we're not worth a glass of water. So then when it comes to the opportunity for rest, we have to feel worth that too.
Yeah.
Like, we feel like we have to earn it. And even then we don't get to enjoy it, because we don't feel like
we feel like we're
sidestepping a list that is sitting very heavily on our shoulders. Mm. You know, and you think back to the old working day, they'd have a morning break and a lunchtime break and an afternoon break. And it wasn't just to pamper the staff. It was because they recognised that rest is conducive to good work.
Mm.
You know, and so many of the non-negotiable building blocks of our mental health have become optional, which is why we're knackered and overwhelmed, because we have to work hard for rest and we never feel like we've worked hard enough to actually enjoy it. We crash into bed.
I did ask the people of Instagram how they ease and avoid overwhelm. Most of them said lists, and I felt very understood. That is how that blog came about. It was my way of processing everything that I couldn't understand about myself. Baths. I think baths are really great because you do have to put your phone down, or you should be. I mean, you wild
people. You risk.
Yeah.
That's my rebellion.
saying no and cancelling things, which is such, feels like such an act of rebellion, but it is all right not to do stuff.
It is. It's. I think it's also in that you have to know yourself, because you have to know that actually sometimes it's about stepping out of your comfort zone and having that social interaction. Yes. And sometimes the self-loving thing is just not.
Yeah, it's true. It depends. Yeah. Because actually what I found is when my mental health is at its worst, it's got a very, it's very good at tricking me to cancel the things that I need most, which is seeing friends or exercising. And, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Other coping strategies, remembering to breathe, which, God, that's a big one, isn't it?
It's a big one, Alice, but it's the freest and most
effective
form of addressing that kind of nervous system, activating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is calming that nervous system stress response down. Because if you think back to the cavemen, their nervous systems were basically there to kind of be fired up should a bear come, so that they can literally run for their lives and save their family. We still have that stress response, but a lot of the triggers are their thoughts. Like they don't actually require us
to run
for our lives, but we still have that physiological response. So what the breathing does, you know, many of us used it in labour.
Yeah.
So in fact, that was when I realised quite how powerful it is. And I thought, this is so good, I'm going to carry on. Now I use it when I drive past lorries. We can feel that kind of that shallow breathing, and it increases the cortisol and the adrenaline. And often that's why we're not sleeping well, because we've got too much of it in our body. So if we're able even practice the breathing when you don't need it, so that when you're stressed and feeling overwhelmed, it's really instinctive to you. Practice it at night. It's a great time to practice, because it will actually benefit your sleep. But yeah, the breath is so important.
Even just the mindfulness of focusing on that and not thinking about what you're thinking about.
Yeah, and overthinking actually is also another one of those fillers in that jar with the sand. You know, it's the phone, it's that constant. But then anxiety and overthinking is actually often a coping mechanism to avoid dealing with the thoughts and the feelings that are actually sometimes harder to deal with, that want more attention. So we can fill our minds with stuff, and overthinking and going around, you know, off all these different scenarios, it takes brain energy, it takes up space, it takes focus. So finding ways to kind of dress overthinking can also be really helpful, because our brains are just constantly busy, you know. No wonder we feel overwhelmed. We're running 100 miles an hour, we're thinking 100 miles an hour.
In a low moment between Ben and I listed all the things in my head. But I was like, buy wrapping paper, buy cars, get well book day costumes, water the plants, get dog food, get some new leggings, you know, get a new size up on nappies. He's like, is that seriously what's in your head? And I was like, I just want you to see this in a very, very physical. I was just like, out of interest, could you just highlight the things that you're thinking about on there? And and all he would have been thinking about was bloody sport. No, 50% true. But it was good for him to see what's in my head. But also, off the back of that activity, we had to move things over to his list. So I really hate doing the washing. That's like a real trigger for me. And so he now does it. And what I've had to really learn about myself is that he doesn't do it how I would like him to do it. He does it. He likes to get quite a build up and then do loads of washes. I would prefer that he did it day to day, but I have to literally cross that off my list. Yeah. It's not my gig.
Yeah.
And that is again, adds to the overwhelm, because there are so many things where it would probably be easier for me to do it. I could do it quicker and I believe I could do it better. But until you start relinquishing that control and going, okay, let him do the plants, and if he kills them, that's fine.
That's
let him
it.
Do
it.
You, otherwise, we don't get
that's
anywhere.
It. And you know what? You think they won't do it as well as me. They won't do it as quick as me. Probably very true. But how much is that, you know, it's that emotional load. And it's not even, it's got to be more than just, can you put that wash on? Because actually, there's a lot of unseen load there, right? It's you thinking, right, Woody needs that for school. You know, that hasn't been done for a while. That needs folding and putting away. So actually, you know, if you just hand over the actual action, you're still holding the weight of the lead up thinking. Yeah. So actually just to hand the whole thing over and be like, and it's, you know, a lot of this is coming to terms with the fact that we just cannot do it all.
No.
It's not working for us. That's why we're all sat here wondering how we can make this better. And it is just changing those, you know, those perfectionist levels that, yes, we know we can do it. We know we can do it all. We can do it all. But what the heck gets lost in the process? It's costing something to have those standards there. It's costing something to be living at such a speed. Yes, sure, you can function and it's working, but what's getting lost? It's the, you know, that anxiety, that panic. You know, I got appendicitis when I was pregnant with Charlie, but it was really interesting because actually, you know, when these things do happen, we learn, you know, don't let it take appendicitis in pregnancy for you to learn to get to that place of actually, yeah, people around me can do it. It might not be done how I, you know, I might get home and the cupboard's stacked weird, but, you know, the kids, annoying. The kids were fed and...
Yeah, they're fine.
You know, and there's a cost to all of this. There's a, you know, there's a cost to it all. And often it's us. It's our happiness. It's our peace. It's our joy. It's our ability to enjoy the moment without feeling kind of suffocated by all of the stuff.
I asked people for some questions and before I share them, I had many messages to say how great you are. Oh, and they're right. You are really, really great. So I needed to share
nice
that.
Things.
How do you identify when overwhelm becomes something more serious like postnatal depression?
I think when it's ongoing, and I think it's really helpful for us all to think back to a really like happy and healthy time in our lives. What did we feel like? What did our life look like? What did our day look like? What were the things that we did when we were feeling a bit low? And actually use that as a reference point. Because again, you know, when things kind of happen incrementally, sometimes we don't quite realise how hard and challenging and bad it's got. So looking back and using what you remember to be you. And how far have things changed? And what's the difference there? And how long has it been feeling like this for? And I always say to people, if you're questioning whether you've got postnatal depression, if you're questioning whether you've got depression, it's worth getting support.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you tick 8 boxes out of 12. It comes back to worth again. You know, it comes back to like, I'm worth getting support. I'm worth telling a friend. Mm. I'm worth, you know, challenging the fact that, yes, I might feel like a burden, but does a friend feel like a burden to me when they come and open up? If not, then what? Maybe it's an honour for a friend if I go and talk to them about something that's hard for me. You know, we all deserve to get that support. And I think, you know, don't wait until you feel like you tick a load of boxes on a spreadsheet somewhere until you...
And sometimes, well, a couple of things to add. At the point when my anxiety was the most crippling, quite a long time ago now, I knew that it had become a thing because it was encroaching into parts of me that I didn't expect it to ever. You know, I've always loved travelling and I was somewhere and thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I was going out and didn't want to do that anymore. And if it edges into parts of you that feel like it changes you, then it's time to get help.
Yeah.
But also I found the very act of seeking professional help was the stepping stone, not before even seeing anyone, but reaching out to get help is the stepping stone to getting better, because it's acknowledging it, isn't it?
It's that moment of surrender.
Yeah.
And I think that's always been a turning point for me. And I know with most of the clients that I've ever had, when they've hit like a real low, it's that point of, you know what? I actually haven't got this.
No, this isn't.
You know, I'm actually not okay. This isn't fun for me.
No.
I'm not enjoying life. I'm not able to enjoy the things I used to. And it is that, that is the turning point.
Yeah.
And that requires vulnerability. And that's a big challenge for a lot of people.
Yeah. The problem with anxiety is that it becomes preemptive. So you're worrying before you've even gone out. And suddenly your life gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And also you can't imagine that things can ever get better, but they absolutely can.
So I've got some tips.
Give us some tips.
On how we can do this. So I think, first of all, you know, it's really important to check in with yourself. I always say to clients, I'm always FFN, fear, feeling, need. You know, the way that you check in with your family. What am I fearing anything? Am I worried about anything right now? What am I feeling? What do I need? And you know what? Like, that's such a challenging question to ask people. Like, if I'm to say to you, what do you need? Like, what do you need?
Time off. That's always going to be the answer, isn't
it? Okay, so if that's the answer, then how might you get that? Okay, maybe you don't get like a weekend spa break. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Afternoon.
But what can you get? Is it actually just, you know, when the kids are down, just what's it time off from? Is it kind of overstimulation? Is it people needing you? Can you shut yourself away in the bathroom for an hour with a book? You know, how can you get a little bit of that? Because I think often we think, I can't.
It's got to be big.
I want a flipping holiday. I'm not going to get that, am I? But it's like, what about that holiday is it that you need? Is it that change? Is it
nature, you know, or is it
proper conversation with your partner? And how can you, you know, how can you get a little bit of that? And again, kind of meeting those basic needs. So recognizing your basic needs. Am I hungry? Am I tired? Am I cold? You know, and what can I do about that? Like, what do I need? Because if we're not meeting those, then we're going to find it hard to believe we're worth rest, which is like the antidote to all of this. Questioning yourself about what are the things that make you you? Like, what makes you you? Is it drawing? Is it like having a laugh? Is it time with certain friends? And how can you reintroduce? Because those are the things that get edged out.
And that actually is where I think motherhood is such a trigger for this, because you have to reemerge as a different person.
Think sometimes we have this idea of motherhood that to be a good mother, we have to give ourselves completely away. And then we end up with nothing left. And then we're tired and we don't know who we are anymore. You know, sometimes it's a case of how can you reintroduce just little things that make you you? When I went through this whole kind of burnout crash, I found it really hard to do nice stuff for myself. I felt guilty. I felt ashamed. And Taryn marched me into the local David Lloyd and was like, for the love of God, you will come here because you are intolerable. And, you know, I think I had just felt like I was a martyr to my, I was doing everything for everyone because that's what I should have been doing. But I didn't realize that it wasn't just me that was paying the price. It was him. It was the kids. I was snappy. I was grumpy. I was impatient. I was finding it really hard to respond in a way that I like to as a parent. So it kind of really taught me that self-care isn't just about me. Like, we've got this whole thing that self-care isn't selfish. Well, it isn't. But actually, it's refilling you so that other people can enjoy you. Like, Taryn will enjoy me so much more when I've had some time to kind of refuel than when I'm living from the bottom of the barrel and not even seeing the flowers that he's brought home, you know?
Yeah, and even if that's an easier way of justifying it to yourself, that's, yeah. Which I'm not saying it is,
yeah,
but we can short circuit it more like,
absolutely.
I should actually do this to be a better mother.
I've got to do it to be a better mother. So if it's easier to do it for someone else to begin with, then sure, start off with that's better than nothing. But then in time, what you're doing is you're building your self-esteem back up. You're telling yourself that you're worth doing this.
I love the whole concept that you talk about often on Instagram, which is also reframing things. So it's not about making an excuse for the overwhelm, but there is, for me, when things begin to crash, it's that I've got a lot on and then I talk negatively about what I've got on. Whereas when you're like, oh, I get to
instead of I've got to. Yeah. That's honestly, that has changed my life. So the whole thing is about changing I've got to I get to. And it's so simple, but I seriously cried in front of my washing machine the other day because I was like, oh, I've got to do the washing. And suddenly I was like, no, I get to do the washing. And I started thinking about how blessed I was to have my children's clothes to wash. Like the fact that I have a washing machine in my home, you know, that we are affording a mortgage for. And suddenly, like, this thing just became this, like, this honour. And I don't do it for everything. Sometimes I'm literally, like, chanting down the road in the rain as I do the school one. I get to, you know, because it's this kind of self-parenting of ourselves and, like, coaching ourselves into it. But that's been, like, gratitude has been such a game changer for me, and not in a cheesy way. Like, it really has. I learned this morning of a friend that had died in a car crash, and I knew him at uni. I haven't spoken to him for years, and he was an amazing guy. And I think one of the things that he'd written that had been reposted was about, like, if we live not doing things because of what other people think or because of obligations, then we won't live the life we're meant to live. And two things, like, I just think that's bigger picture thinking. It's sometimes we literally need to look up. Like, we need to look up into the sky and think there is so much more than, you know, just about life and the bigger picture.
Yeah,
than the to-do list and the nitty-gritty of what we feel is so drudgy. You know, there's a bigger picture, like, this is our life. This is our one life. And I don't think anyone gets to the end and thinks, thank God I chased the end of that to-do list for my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff like that, and it sounds morbid, and it's sad that it takes this to remind me. But I want to look into my children's face, and I want to be there. I want to be there.
Yeah, not
I'm
be
not just talking
there.
About being there forever.
Physically, yeah.
I mean, I want to be with them. I want to have my husband in my bed and think, I'm like, yeah, you're really annoying sometimes, but
I don't want you to touch me, but I like you.
I've got you there, you know?
Yeah, we're lucky.
You're here, like, do you know what I mean? Sometimes it is about just drawing ourselves back to the presence and reminding us what what it is about finding the joy in those mundane day-to-day things that one day, you know, that some people would just die for those the day-to-day back. And it's about finding the gratitude in that and looking up from the stuff and thinking, yeah, that's important.
There might be residue that wouldn't have...
Do you know what I mean? And what you said about it doesn't matter.
They can go...
Let that be your mantra.
And they can go... Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
They can go to school with a rubbish world birthday costume. Yeah. And they were... You know, if I asked them what they went as last year, they won't remember.
I'm not spending ages making something. I'd rather sit in front of a book TV with Taryn or... Yeah.
That's the thing. It's become so far away from... I need to get over this, but it just feels so far away from the thing that it's unimportant. Yeah. Thank you. You've given me so much to think about. So, first of all, where can people find you? And is there anything you want to shout about? There is. You've got to do this bit now, okay. Properly.
I am at Anna Martha on Instagram. And I've written a book called Mind Over Mother. And it is about postnatal anxiety and worry. So it's kind of focused on the first year. So a lot of the... I wrote it when Florence was a very little baby, between her nap times and... But do you know what? It was such a relief to write it because I'd had it in my head for so long. I was just desperate to get it on the page. It only took me 8 weeks. It was just all the bit before that was... Oh, it was a relief. I told you, I write books in my head. It's so annoying. I've already mentally written the next one. But yeah, so Mind Over Mother. And it's about that worry and anxiety and the hormones and the nap anxiety and that sense of the worry about health. And it's saying, sure, it's common, but it doesn't need to take from your experience of motherhood. It doesn't need to rob you of your enjoyment of those times. And this is how not to let it.
If you could have one honest conversation with somebody, whether that be someone in your past, someone you know now, someone on the internet, a younger version of yourself, who would it be and what would you say?
Oh my goodness, should have prepared myself for this one. I think that off the top of my head is someone that I massively admire. I love Brené Brown. But when she did a TED talk called The Power of Vulnerability, and it changed my life. I went from a therapist that was very much, I don't know, I was taught in a certain way and I was kind of quite formulaic in the way I worked. So just being like, you know what? This is really all it's about. It's about openness and honesty and letting people see you and getting comfortable with being seen and not being afraid to see yourself. And that's really kind of the essence of everything I do. And it is hard sharing my own story, but all I want to do that for is because I want to show vulnerability so that it can encourage other people. So I'd like to have a chat with her.
I mean, can I come?
Don't even know what I'd say.
I would like to meet Brené Brown, but I think I need to do a bit more life first so that I've got a bit more to talk about. Do I ask the people of Instagram to complete the sentence, I'll be honest, I, and I'm going to read them out and I'm going to do one and then I'm going to ask you to do one. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll be honest, I want to eat melted cheese every second of the day, have no idea what TikTok is, blame myself for my sexual assault, think about kicking my husband in the nuts when he's snoring, take on too much for self-validation. Poignant, isn't it? And panicking about being pregnant with my third baby. What have we got to say about that? Three kids is a breeze, right?
Love it.
We love it. It's hard, but it's brilliant.
It's hard, but it's good.
I'm shitting myself about coronavirus. Think I have chicken pox, but I'm secretly looking forward to being off work. Think hummus is very overrated. I'm more anxious than people realise. Do you want me to do mine first or do you want to do
I've
your...
I've got one.
Go, get it out of your head.
I've got to be honest. Is that how it starts?
Yes.
I'm wearing deodorant for the first time in years. And my friend was shocked. I had to ask her to borrow some. And she was like, what, you don't have any? I just don't. I just don't. And I thought, well, I might get a bit anxious and sweaty, so I probably should, but I didn't have any. And that's...
But the reason I'm looking at you like this, and you can read it on my notes, I am going to say, if I'm honest, I'm worried I'm getting worse BO as I get older. And then I don't know, and whether it's worse when I've got my period or whether my nose is just more...
Are you just overthinking it?
Yeah. But
I might have had BO all along and no one's told me. Maybe I've got a
terrible... How do you not wear deodorant? Parenting is so sweaty.
I don't know. But from the shock of my friend when I asked if she had any, I think I need to add some to my shop.
I don't think you smell.
Thank you. Well, I won't tonight.
No, I'm waiting for you to say.
You don't smell.
Great, thanks. To wind this up, I want to again thank the sponsors of tonight, Destinology and the Hoxton Hotel, and all of you lovely lot for coming out. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Honestly. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you.